looking to greatly improve the nation's transportation infrastructure. Just ahead, what the Trump administration's $1 trillion package might mean for Florida. Good Tuesday morning. And live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9 and never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen to us anytime or on iTunes or stream us live right now on our Facebook page. Just ahead, hear all about plans the Trump administration says it has to expand roads, deepen ports like Jacksport, rebuild our aging highways and bridges, and more. We're talking transportation and infrastructure right now. Get on the line at 549-2937. Later, speaking of transportation, toll roads are coming back to town. We'll tell you where they will be. Plus, meet a local attorney taking up an amazing feat to raise funds for Jacksonville Area Legal Aid. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, the Trump administration has an ambitious rebuilding plan for the nation. But is the president's $1 trillion infrastructure package headed for a roadblock or two on Capitol Hill? The White House is hoping for bipartisan support for the plan to help deliver a win for the administration this year. But it's facing hurdles, including disagreements over funding, conservatives worried about the price tag, a packed legislative calendar, and tension from the ongoing Russia probes. Meanwhile, the First Coast is closely watching the Trump administration's infrastructure plan for a number of reasons. And the man perhaps closest to the action, Marty Fiorentino. He's principal with Jacksonville's The Fiorentino Group. He spent the last 2.5 months in D.C. meeting with U.S. Secretary of Transportation Elaine Chao on the administration's plan for improving our country's transportation network and overall infrastructure. A big job and lots to discuss. Marty Fiorentino, thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you very much, Melissa.
And what are your questions about the Trump administration's plans for the nation's infrastructure? How to rebuild our highways, bridges, ports, and more? And what does it mean for the First Coast? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or weigh in on our Facebook page where we're streaming this show live right now. And Marty, on Thursday, you're going to address a meeting of the Jacks Chamber to talk about your work in Washington with Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao. You've actually spent the last couple of months up in Washington working on this. What can you tell us about the administration's plans? We know there's a $1 trillion package involved.
Well, I can tell you that the president has made this a priority, and I think everyone knows that by now, and is challenging the American people to look at transportation as something that's not only potholes and waiting in traffic, which costs Americans sit in traffic about 7 billion hours a year, and that costs us about $300 billion in wasted time and fuel, so there's an environmental impact to that, but also the productivity that's lost and the competitiveness that we need today in order to have be able to compete in a global compete in a global economy.
And when we look at potential roadblocks that could derail this effort, and it's an ambitious effort with bipartisan support, let's take them one by one. Conservatives in the House in particular, fiscal conservatives, how can the president sell this plan to members of his own party before he even begins to go across the aisle?
Yeah, I always think that transportation is not so much a partisan issue with Republicans and Democrats, but more importantly, it's an issue among rural America and urban America, because there are different needs in each. And so for Republicans, they're going to be very interested in what's called the pay-fors. How are we going to pay for this? And will it increase the deficit? And Democrats are going to be very interested in putting people back to work. And so when you put both of those together, I think there's a lot of room for both parties to work together, because both parties know that this is important for the economy and jobs.
549-2937 to join us. Now, you've spent a couple of months in Washington working very closely with Elaine Chao, the Secretary of Transportation. What types of infrastructure projects is she focusing on? What can we expect to see if this plan gets its way through Congress?
Well, I think they're going to be a couple of things. Projects that increase productivity, projects that are ready, and projects that look to the future. And so those are, and then increase safety. Safety's always got to be the first priority. So those are the types of projects that I think the administration will be looking at, and certainly Secretary Chao.
She met with senators on Capitol Hill this week and said everything is on the table when we look at rebuilding the nation in this way, but said funding offsets for this package have not yet been finalized. How do you see the administration paying for this ambitious plan? Other presidents have talked about this as well, and it's always been so difficult to figure out the funding piece.
Well, I think if people know one thing, it's that President Trump is a builder, and that he's somewhat impatient. I think that's maybe an understatement. So paying for this, the plan is for a $1 trillion plan over 10 years. And we can't expect the federal government to pay for all that. But I think what is being looked at now is maybe $200 billion in direct federal investment, leveraging that to the $1 trillion mark. Some of that will be public-private partnerships. Some of that may be repatriation of funds from abroad, and some of that may be federal assets. You know, there are a lot of unused or underutilized federal assets that could be sold to the private sector. And I'm not talking about the Washington Monument, of course, but I'm talking about buildings that are underutilized, undervalued, that the private sector is better able to take and monetize. And then also some infrastructure that we have that are, you know, they're large dams, and that may be better in the private sector. I'm not saying they would be. And then also the administration is looking at a number of things other than just highways, bridges, ports. Those are critically important. Airports, but also broadband. How do we reach more of America? President's also talking about new VA hospitals as a part of the infrastructure package. So that we look at this in a much broader view than just roads and bridges.
And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Jacksonville's Marty Fiorentino. He spent the last 2 months in Washington working closely with the Secretary of Transportation, Elaine Chao. What are your questions and comments about the White House's plan for the nation's infrastructure? We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Now, you're known as a guy who's lobbied on behalf of the ride-sharing company Uber, right?
Yes.
There are a lot of technologies disrupting transportation, whether it's a ride-sharing app like Uber, autonomous vehicles and drones are expected to become more widely used in the next decade or so. How do you see all of this disruptive technology affecting how we get around the country and how we pay for it?
Well, that's exciting. And I think since the advent of the airplane, there's not been a more exciting time in this country as it relates to transportation, particularly these new technologies. The JTA is having its State of the Transportation Authority today at lunch, and I think the guest speaker is going to talk about these disruptive technologies. And if you look at take the JTA, for example, they're looking, what do we do with the Skyway Express now? It is old, it's antiquated, and the technology, you can't even find parts for it. So can we get a system that is an autonomous vehicle that is at the Skyway level, and then it mm-hmm. comes down to street level, and then comes here into the sports complex? Automated vehicles are going to change the way we look at transportation. Are we going to need more roads, wider roads? These vehicles will go much closer together. People safety will be increased. You know, the most accidents are actually up year after year, and they're up because we're texting, we're not paying attention, we're emailing, we're talking on the phone while we're driving. Wouldn't it be nice to sit down and not worry about any of that, open your tablet, read the newspaper, whatever you like, and you plug in where you're going, you get there safely, soundly, and with a lot less stress.
How soon do you think this technology is going to become routine? I've heard a million different projections.
Well, just look at your smartphone. Where was that 10 years ago, 5 years ago? Technology is changing in the blink of an eye. I think it will be much, much quicker than we can imagine, probably in the next several years. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at already the vehicles on the road and what they can do, and what they, from a safety standpoint, what they can do from what you can program into your vehicle, it's amazing. I had the opportunity when I was in Washington to have dinner with the German Minister of Transport, and he brought with him the, I think he called him the Assistant Secretary of Digital Domain, and what they talked about was, one, the Autobahn. There's no speed limit. They hardly have any accidents. And then they talk about they're looking at less regulation for automated vehicles because they are looking at it as an entertainment vehicle, as an entertainment venue, as I mentioned before, so that you get in and stress with little stress, get to your destination safer, more secure, and in a way that's safer for the traveling public.
Now, meanwhile, it's been reported that Secretary Chao is going to unveil more of this package on infrastructure in the third quarter of this year. The president is also out with his proposed budget this week. Infrastructure and transportation is part of that. As we look at all of this, let's bring it back to Northeast Florida. How do you see our corner of the state pushing for transportation funding? And what about Jaxport? That's such an important piece of the puzzle as Jaxport seeks additional funding for what it would like to do in terms of deepening the river to accommodate bigger ships. What about that?
Well, I think it's critical. I chaired the Port Authority many years ago, and we started on this journey of a deeper port. And as the post-Panamax vessels have come online, the widening of the Panama Canal, it's become, in my opinion, even more critical that we do so because of exports, imports, the jobs it will create. And I think the port is on a good path for doing that. And we have to think, when you talk about Northeast Florida, the governor has been terrific with his funding of ports in general across the state, and particularly here at Jaxport. And also now that the pension issue is behind us, I think the mayor is in a very strong position to look at, you know, where are we going to invest our dollars now? What is the future of Jacksonville going to be like? And I think a deeper Jaxport will bring in more manufacturing jobs, better jobs, and will create a much better community.
Where will the funding come from?
Well, the state has offered right now a good part of the funding. The federal government will provide part of the funding, and then we're going to have to locally look at how the port and the city can work together to fund the rest. And so it will take state, local, and federal funding to do this, and I think we're well positioned to do this. If you look at a couple of things, one, the mayor and his position with the governor and his position with the president. You've got the work that I did at DOT. Susie Wiles was ran the president's campaign here in Florida. And then a little known fact, Reverend John Allen Newman, who is on the port board, just married Omarosa, who works in the White House and has been a longtime ally of President Trump. So I would say that Northeast Florida is in as good a position or better than anyone in the country.
Okay, let's go to some calls on this at 549-2937. Lori is on the west side. Hey, Lori, good morning.
How are you?
Okay, thanks.
I have a couple questions. One is, how many people work within 5 minutes of their job? Number two, have we ever done any studies? And number three, if we hadn't, we can always back into the calculation by taking up gas tax and assuming everybody gets maybe 10 miles per gallon, okay? If you assume that, you could back into the, and we could understand how much we're driving and how much we could save. That's where I'm coming from here.
All right, thanks, Lori.
My answer off the air.
Thanks, Lori. Marty.
Well, that's a great point. You know, in Europe, they make great use of mass transit because they're huge population centers and that are together. And in America, we are so spread out that we have a little more difficult time with that,
Especially in a city like ours, which is one of the most spread out in the country.
And as we, that's exactly right. And as we look at, again, the autonomous vehicle phenomenon, what's going on, as we look at mass transit and how we can do that better here in Jacksonville with bus rapid transit, I think that we'll make better use of the last mile when you have a bus system that stops and then maybe an autonomous vehicle or ride sharing takes place. And
could
so all of that is very important.
That? The last mile problem, that's something transportation geeks really focus on. Could you explain what that is?
Well, that is when the you get on your bus, and it takes you from point A to point B, but to get then to your job or to the where you're going to shop or to your home, that's the last mile. And how are you going to get there? You can walk if you want to, but also you could ride share, and there are already apps, and Uber has partnered with the JTA so that there's an app that will help you with that. But also for in the Washington, D.C. area where I was just in, where once you took the metro to from point A to point B, then you could get on a ride sharing or an Uber or Lyft car to your destination. So that's very, very important. And that's technology is just going to transform that last mile. Mm-hmm. And I want to mention one other thing about autonomous vehicles. What it will mean for the disabled and those that are homebound is incredible. So there are those that need it most who this is going to make, it's going to be transformational as it relates to their lives. And I think that's an important point.
549-2937. Vaughn is in Arlington. Hey, Vaughn, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, I would like to ask, how will the autonomous vehicles and vehicles that are actually being driven by people, how will they intertwine on the road? Has much thought been given to that?
I think that's a question a lot of people have. And there's a lot of anxiety about whether AVs, autonomous vehicles, will be safe. How is Secretary Chao looking at this as she looks ahead?
Well, that's, the public's going to have to come along with this before it's reality. And Melissa, you asked me earlier how soon this might take place. And so that's going to be a big part of this. But these vehicles are so technologically advanced. And again, they're not here yet, but they're coming very, very quickly, that they have sensors that will look at other vehicles, that will detect other vehicles, that will cause them to, frankly, be safer than you or I and our naked eye seeing if somebody's getting into our lane. And those exist now. There are cars with this lane assist. So it's going to take time, but I think it's going to be my grandson, I'm not sure if he will ever drive a vehicle. Because it's certainly, he's 6 years old. By the time he is 16, I think this will have taken place.
Kids won't need to go out and get a driver's license.
Well, I heard
that's
statistic.
That's mind-blowing for a lot of Americans, isn't it?
I had dinner with, again, while I was in Washington, a gentleman from New York City. His son was graduating from high school, and he said he lived in the downtown area. Out of the 120 graduates, 96 did not have driver's licenses.
Because they don't think they need them.
They don't need them, and they don't think they're going to need them.
What about Tiger Grants? JTA and Jaxport have pursued Tiger Grant funding in this area for transportation projects. What's the future of that program under this administration?
Well, the budget that was released, I guess it's been about 2 months now, eliminated the Tiger Grant program, the president's budget. But I think that the question is going to be, how does that reappear? It was a favorite among the Congress, and as we know, the president proposes and the Congress disposes.
Right.
So there will be I believe, this is my personal belief, that there will be, it may not be called the Tiger Grant, but there will be another grant program that will take its place.
And infrastructure is a huge priority of this administration, as you mentioned. They're proposing a $1 trillion package. May not be the final package. What are the politics of getting this through when healthcare and tax reform are seen as more important legislative priorities, do you think?
Well, again, I think that infrastructure is something that has much better opportunity for Republicans and Democrats to agree on than maybe tax reform or healthcare reform. And so for that reason, I believe in the third quarter, you'll see an infrastructure plan come forward. It may not be the full plan. It may be a smaller plan. But I think there is a lot of agreement beginning in Congress across party lines to show that this is something that we need to do. And don't forget, you're going to have 435 members of Congress up for reelection, and they're going to want to take something home, and this may be it.
Let's go to a few tweets from Artie Fiorentino, and then we'll go to your calls in a moment. Here's a tweet for you. Which infrastructure projects provide the most economic growth and long-term job creation?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I think infrastructure, at its purest sense, when you talk about building roads and building bridges and building railroads and port dredging, those traditional programs provide the highest rate of growth for jobs. And frankly, these are good jobs, and they're also jobs that don't require advanced degrees, don't even require degrees. They put people to work. And I think that's what will be so attractive for both Republicans and Democrats alike.
Here's a tweet. The problem with Jacksonville's mass transit is it's a spoke and wheel design with no connected spokes. Another tweet for you from Doug. Why ruin the St. John's River to deepen a shallow, sandy port that will never be able to naturally compete with deeper rock ports? The argument against the port deepening.
Well, I think the answer to that is we can sit back and let everybody beat us to the punch, or we can either get in the game. And I think it's critical that we get in the game. It's also about economic development. You know, what kind of community do we want to have? And I think there's a tremendous need for good jobs, high-paying jobs here, and this will create that. It also is going to open up the markets in Northeast Florida and all of Florida, because we have the gem in Florida. We have the confluence of I-95, I-10. We have the St. John's River. We have the Atlantic Ocean. We have the major railroads, Norfolk Southern, CSX, Florida East Coast Railway. All of that confluence is here in Northeast Florida, and we need to take advantage of that.
Carrie in San Marco. Go ahead, Carrie.
Hi, yes. I had a question. Every project of chance of this sort of thing creates jobs. If you were to order the projects, are we looking at something that helps people get across the city, like some kind of mass transit that would help the common people, which would also create jobs? Or are we looking at an oil port, which I'm told Betsy DeVos is related, her family's related to oil port construction. And when I listen to car building, I think of the big three automakers, you know, winning in that deal, as opposed to European-style mass transit. So which is going to come first, European-style mass transit or oil ports and cars?
Thank you for that.
Well, I don't know about oil ports and cars, but I think that when you look at the priorities, I think the community is going to set those priorities. I think the public's going to set those priorities. And that's what's going to demand is going to set those priorities, and competition is going to set those priorities.
Any final thoughts you can share? As I said, you've spent 2.5 months in Washington working directly with Secretary Chao. What else should we expect when it comes to this, do you think, over the next several months?
Well, I think a couple of things. Critical is shortening the permitting time, because the requirement that for to build a road or a bridge, you know, it's just not a couple of years. You're talking about 5, 10, 15 years to build a bridge, and that cannot that can't be maintained, that can't be sustained in a competitive economy. So contracting the permitting time limit is also going to create private capital. There are billions of dollars in private capital on the sidelines now waiting to invest in projects, but if they when they see a project for return taking 10, 15 years, that capital is not going to be created. And then the second thing I would say is that there's no one-size-fits-all approach. And this goes to the lady's comment just a minute ago. I think that you need to look at what's best for your community, what's best for your state, and what's best for the public. And I think that will create different approaches for different areas.
We'll continue to follow it. In the meantime, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us.
Thank you very much.
Marty Fiorentino is principal with Jacksonville's The Fiorentino Group. Meanwhile, much still ahead on this show later. Find out what a local attorney is doing to help Jacksonville area legal aid. You won't believe it. But up next, we'll continue transportation talk. as FDOT talks tolls. These days, they're called express lanes. That's in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, how special is this special counsel? Democrats and Republicans have welcomed the appointment of former FBI Director Robert Mueller to investigate Russia and the election. The president says it's bad for the country.
I respect the move, but the entire thing has been a witch hunt.
Answering your questions about Mr. Mueller and the special counsel next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Join WJCT for Be My Neighbor Day, Saturday, June 3rd from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the WJCT studios. The day will include family-friendly activities, PBS Kids characters, food trucks, and so much more. The event is free, but reservations are required. For more information, log on to wjct.org/events.
It's a jazz festival week, so the Electro Lounge is playing jazz Tuesday through Saturday night at 9 p.m. on WJCT 89.9, your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Big news as tolled lanes are returning to the First Coast later this year. Now, they're also known as express lanes. They're optional tolled lanes that offer you, the driver, a chance to bypass congested areas. You can expect express lanes to debut this fall here in Northeast Florida. Mary Justino and Hampton Ray are both public information officers with the Florida Department of Transportation, and they're here in studio. Hey, good morning to you both.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
And what are your questions for FDOT? It's your chance to connect with them, 549-2937. Mary, let's start with you. These express lanes are common in other big Florida cities. They're coming to Jacksonville. What can you tell us?
They are, and we want to clarify a couple quick differences. We know sometimes you hear express lanes, and those are the projects that Hampton's assigned to, and actually you'll see those on 295 and on I-95, and not to be confused with the First Coast Expressway, which is my project, yeah. And that's out there on State Road 23. There are similarities and differences, for sure.
Let's talk about that. Hampton Ray, this is not the tolls of old that older folks around Jacksonville might well remember.
Yeah, that's right. These are all electronic toll roads, so there's no stopping. You travel at highway speeds. The express lanes are actually separated from regular non-tolled general use lanes. Basically, the express lanes are designed for commuters. Once you're in the express lanes, you can't get out. So you choose to use the express lanes just after the Buckman Bridge, and you go all the way to about the I-95 merger. So you'll be able to get off the express lanes and either continue on I-295 or go north or south on I-95.
And this is beginning when, would you say?
Yeah, so we're looking at the end of fall, end of this year for sure. So we're really excited about it.
And people will need to get a sun pass if they're going to use these lanes regularly.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no toll by plate option. So this is a, if you don't have a sun pass, you will be charged $25 as a penalty. The express lanes are variable tolling. So the toll rate will actually fluctuate based on the capacity within the roadway. So as more people are in the roadway, in the express lanes, the price will go up. And the fewer people in the express lanes, the price will go down.
How has the public responded to this so far? And by the way, give us a call with your questions for FDOT at 549-2937. Way, way back when the toll bridges were taken down, for a lot of years it seemed as though the tolls in Jacksonville were sort of a political third rail. This is new technology, though, and it seems like the resistance might not be so great.
Yeah, so the express lanes are really innovative, and this is totally a choice. There's no requirement to use the express lanes. The general use lanes, the current lanes that you're using right now, will continue to remain free. Mary, it does have, you know, I'll let you speak about the toll road itself.
You bet. So State Road 23, a lot of folks know it by Brandon Field Chafee, that toll road, whatever you call it, it's First Coast Expressway, and it also is a SunPass administered facility. The difference is if you don't have a SunPass transponder, you can still use the First Coast Expressway with toll by plate, which is a higher rate. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions that does come up in answer to your question, Melissa, about response from the community is we do emphasize to folks that they still have a choice. Just like with express lanes, they can use them or not use them. There certainly is still access on the west side of Jacksonville, down through Oakleaf and into Clay County, to use local access roads. We're not cutting off access to any of those arteries. Mm-hmm. We're simply constructing and opening State Road 23 as a toll road, which of course, folks have known has been coming for about 20 years.
And when is the timetable for that project?
Same as Express Lanes, end of the year, which is sort of why Hampton and I are here together. We're definitely wanting to make folks aware that both projects are wrapping up towards the end of the year, and both are SunPass administered.
All right, let's go to your calls for FDOT. Tracy in San Jose. Go ahead, Tracy.
Hi, I'm not sure most people realize that we have express lanes coming to Florida because Rick Scott hired a transportation secretary who was working for the company who builds 80% of the toll roads in the country. While he was FDOT secretary, he mandated that all new lanes on limited access highways in Florida would be toll lanes. And he then left and went back to work for the company that built 80% of the toll lanes.
Thanks for that. Who wants to take that one? Hampton.
Yeah, I'll take it. So the express lanes are really an innovative idea. They've been around the country since early 2000s. They really are an interesting way to add capacity to the roadway without allow us to have additional capacity in a faster time period. So the express lanes really do help the general use lanes as well. And it is totally a choice to use the express lanes. You know, there's no requirement. What we've seen in other parts of the state, for instance, in Miami, they recently added additional lanes, additional express lanes down there. They've seen the general use lanes, the free ones, increase from about 19 miles to 45 miles per hour during peak times. Our goal here in Northeast Florida is to keep the express lanes no less than 45 miles per hour during that in that initial stretch during peak hours. And right now, just to give you an idea, the peak hour times in that traffic corridor are actually less than 20 miles per hour right now. So we definitely see this as a net positive.
One more call. CJ on the south side. Go ahead, CJ.
Yes, good morning. A couple questions. First is, why not use like carpool lanes instead of toll lanes? Has there been any research as far as effectiveness?
Okay.
And then the other is this already decided and this is happening, or is there a public comment period so you know we can voice our opinion, or is this just a unilateral thing that happened?
Sure. Mary.
Well, I will tell you that we've talked to a lot of community groups, and there is a difference, obviously, between projects done through the City of Jacksonville and JTA and these toll facilities, which are done through the state, through DOT. I joined DOT last year. Hampton's been with DOT two or more years, and I can tell you that there have been a series of public meetings and public hearings, not just going back the last couple of years, but I actually have done some research myself and have found where as far back as the late 1980s was one of the first public hearings on the idea of having the State Road 23 be a toll road. So yes, we always are available to receive public input, but to answer your question directly, these projects, yes, they are happening. They are opening as SunPass facilities, and we're getting close to that.
And there are two websites, NorthFloridaExpress.com, to learn about express lanes in this area firstcoastexpressway.com to learn more about that project. Mary Justino and Hampton Ray going to be stopping by regularly from your office on this program to update our listeners. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you.
Much more to come. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, the human body in its most vulnerable and disturbing state. We talk with medical historian Richard Barnett about his trilogy of illustrated books on the history of disease, surgery, and dentistry. These books include paintings, woodcuts, and illustrations, some dating back centuries, of surgical procedures, cancers, leprosy, rotting teeth. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Brexit negotiations haven't even really started yet. There is already talk of a hefty exit fee.
If I decide to resign from my local cricket club, I don't then go and negotiate with them about how much longer I should pay the subscription. I just leave.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Not so fast. The Brexit bill. Next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, it's an awe-inspiring mission. Freed to run 6 marathons in 6 days is the incredible effort of just one man, Jacksonville attorney Michael Freed. This Sunday, Freed is going to run his first of 6 marathons over a 6-day period. And it's all to raise money, $50,000 to be exact, for Jacksonville area legal aid. We are so pleased to welcome Gunster business litigator and marathon man Michael Freed. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Melissa.
And Jim Kowalski, president and CEO of Jacksonville Area Legal Aid. Good to see you.
Good morning.
Mike Freed, why are you doing this? Are you gonna come out alive, first of all? 6 marathons in 6 days. That is just mind-blowing.
Well, thanks. The goal is to do something that draws attention enough so that people will pay attention to the real cause, which is indigent people in our community that can't access the justice system. And Jim and his folks over at Legal Aid do such a good job over there. So
on very little money.
On very, very little money and less and less every day.
So this is an incredible effort, Jim, on behalf of JALA, Jacksonville Area Legal Aid. Mike is almost to his goal already of raising $50,000 for legal services for low to no income citizens. This is a lifesaver for legal aid, isn't it?
It is. So what Mike's basically done almost single-handedly is fund one of our lawyers for a year. What that does then is have a ripple effect. Every one of those lawyers' clients, every one of their family members, every one of their community members that they touch, all of that ripple effect flows from Mike's singular and rather amazing effort.
You're going to kick this off Sunday in Tallahassee and then a series of runs over 6 days ending Friday, June 2nd in McClenny. How have you been training for this?
Running a lot.
I mean, like, how much are you running a day? What are you know? This is going beyond just one marathon.
So I started running only about a year ago, sort of backed into it wanting to achieve this for JALA. And I run between 50 and a little over 100 miles a week and tapering down now. The run will actually finish. It'll go from McClenny to the Duval County Courthouse. We'll finish there at 3:30 on Friday. But going courthouse to bring awareness to the good work that lawyers do to represent folks that can't afford it.
You are raising the equivalent of $318 per mile. Is that right?
That's right.
Man, how can people help Freed to run?
Well, thanks, Melissa. I appreciate it. Yeah, if you go to Jacksonville Area Legal Aid's website, or you could Google JALA, J-A-L-A, and Freed to run, it'll bring you right to the site. Jim, perhaps you could give the website parameters.
Sure. It's www.jax, J-A-X, legalaid.org /freed, F-R-E-E-D, to run.
And the actions of Mike, this one guy, are going to help quite a few people. It must be said, this one man is raising more money single-handedly for legal aid than, the state is putting in or anybody else is putting in.
Right. So we have a number of fundraisers. It's very interesting that a lot of them are tied to athletic events. It seems that lawyers like a fair playing field, and Mike is certainly an athlete. The state of Florida is one of only three states that provides zero funding for its civil legal aid programs. And that's resulted, we've got about 409 legal aid lawyers throughout the state. Each is responsible for serving about 22,000 indigent Floridians, and the math simply doesn't work. So somebody like Mike coming along with this astounding effort helps us equalize the math and pay it forward through an entire year's effort.
Donate to the cause at Freed to Run as Mike Freed undertakes 6 marathons in 6 days to benefit Jacksonville's legal aid. Mike Freed, Jim Kowalski, CEO of Legal Aid, thank you so much for letting our listeners in on this. And I can't wait to see you on the other side.
Thanks,
that's going to be an incredible 6 days for you.
Well, I appreciate everyone's support and the example of so many other great lawyers in Jacksonville who do a lot of things to give back to the community.
Thanks, Mike. Well, she's a food impresario who runs the place where the city's caterers come to cook. In today's edition of our Movable Feast, looking at dining and hospitality around the area, Lee Cord of the Women's Food Alliance speaks with Dana Stallings, owner of Kilwin's and Jack's Kitchen.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it the gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Try a tomato plate too.
My first question to you, Dana, is why did you decide to create Jack's Kitchen, and then what is it?
Well, Lee, Jack's Kitchen is a commissary, and a commissary is actually a large facility, and our facility is actually 5,000 square feet, and it is operated for chefs and caterers to come in and be able to use the facility as their place, as their kitchen to cook. And we started Jack's Kitchen actually for our own purpose, not really thinking of the big picture of what Jack's Kitchen ended up being. As the owner of Kilwin's, we do ice cream socials out on site for companies, and we didn't have the space at the St. John's Town Center to be able to produce and do what we needed to do for our catering customers. So we ended up purchasing the building over on Emerson Street, and we moved all of our own catering over there for ice cream and chocolate fountains, and realized we don't need all of this space. But we had to be licensed by Department of Hotels and Restaurants, and we thought, well, what can we do with this? It just kind of came to us like, you know what? Let's open this up to other food industry businesses or startup businesses that can use the facility as well. That way they're not cooking at home where they're not supposed to be.
Yes.
And they have an actual real kitchen to cook out of, and they can be licensed there.
I think it's an amazing concept, and also so easy for somebody to come in and even bring their food truck and use it as a staging area. I mean, I've been there numerous times, and I've seen people making toffee, cookies, food trucks coming and going, caterers setting up on long counters and actually using all of the space that you have, from freezers to storage area.
Right. It is so exciting to me to see it happen, because as a business owner myself, it's that startup that is so scary. And to get started, they can come into Jack's Kitchen, and it's a month-to-month contract. So they're not signing a lease for, 3 years or 5 years and have this obligation, not knowing what's going to happen. So it's a great starting point for a new business that can kind of get their feet in? Because, you know, we all have those special recipes that we think, oh, this was grandma's recipe and I love it and my family loves it. And so they think, well, everybody else is going to love it, right?
Right.
But sometimes that's not the case, or sometimes they don't know how to market. So it gets them started baby steps rather than jumping all in. And then, you know, eventually some of our clients have moved on and gotten their own space and be able to open. Good Dough is an example of that, that just
what
opened
do they
recently.
Make?
Donuts. So they actually use the space to find out, you know, and create their recipes. And so they use Jack's Kitchen, I think, for about 6 months, but they just opened last month in San Marco, their own shop. And so that's exciting for us to see those kind of transitions.
And to be a part of
well.
Their startup, and to also be a mentor, because you've done this before, not only with your company and Kilwins, but you have now worked with a lot of startup companies. One that I can recall is Amelia Toffee. That she is now has her people in there making hot toffee filled with nuts and chocolate and robing. So she has a lot of opportunity to use the equipment. I think the equipment is something that really amazes me when I go in. And I know that you've grown in the short 2 years that I've been familiar with Jack's Kitchen. And now, I mean, you have simple things like scales and freezers and storage. But tell me about some of the other equipment and some of the other types of companies that are using Jack's Kitchen.
We have a wide variety of companies using it. We even have a company that comes in and they just use the space. They don't need like equipment. They just need to be in a space that's licensed. And so they do spices. So they come in and mix their spices and, you know, bottle them. Like you said, we have toffee and we have several caterers that come in, which is a perfect venue for a caterer because a lot of caterers don't have business every single day. So if they need it just once a month or twice a month or whatever it is, it works for them.
It's a very fascinating combination of different companies that you're interacting with. Can we end today's segment for our listeners with a little sweet ending? Will you talk about Kilwins chocolate, please?
So Kilwins is one of my companies, and you know, it's so fun to have Kilwins in there because it's just different. You know, it's away from the store, but it's like a second business for us. And it really is a second business because we're doing our catering out of there. But to have that ice cream in there, it's always fun to do a tour because people are like, oh, Kilwins are here. Because a lot of people know Kilwins. So yes. It gives them some idea of what's going on and who's using the facility. Because a lot of the companies, like I said, are startup businesses. But Kilwins being there is a pretty strong name in Jacksonville. Now we've been here for 13 years, so that's pretty exciting.
And your location is right. Another location is right in the center of the town center.
Correct.
But when I first met you 2 years ago, what excited me was I didn't realize that you can take Kilwins on the road and do an ice cream social. I can't think of a more fun party.
You know, it's great. And it's great for employers because, you know, who doesn't love ice cream? And even if you don't love ice cream, you love the aroma of the waffle cones baking in the facility. So
the aroma of the waffles.
We all love that.
Well, I am delighted. Tell me, leaving us with one thought about Jack's Kitchen, where do you see it evolving in the coming year?
Gosh, you know, we have grown so much already in the 2 years. It's just so exciting to see the companies. You know, really my hope, Lee, is that those companies that are with us continue to grow and spread out in the community, and we allow more companies to come in and use our facility. You know, right now we have 40 companies using the facility, and we currently have 10 that are waiting to be licensed. So they're going through the process right now. So that's pretty exciting, you know, that we continue to grow small businesses in Jacksonville. And that's really what we're all about at Jack's Kitchen.
I hope you'll join me again in the future, and let's talk about some of the specific companies and bring those people on to the Movable Feast so they can talk about how they began their business with you at Jack's Kitchen. And thank you so much. I know you're running off to make ice cream cones and fudge and caramel-covered apples and make sure that everything is going right on the scales of life. Thank you. It's great
to
have you. WJCT Music Director David Luckin is here with a preview of the 2017 Jazz Festival. Hey, what are we listening to?
Oh, you're listening to Miles Davis right now from Jack Johnson. It's the album that just opened the floodgates to fusion music. And I like that Cab Calloway, Everyone Eats When They Come to My House.
Yeah, that's our Movable Feast segment.
I love it. Yeah. But I'm here to remind people that Jazz Festival starts Thursday night, but tonight we start every night this week playing pure jazz, every night on the Electro Lounge, from historic concerts to original albums to some actual Voice of America interviews with jazz musicians.
Wow. Now, the Jazz Festival has such a long history in Jacksonville, and to see it come back, it began in 1981. And it's had a lot of changes over the years, but it's sort of a mainstay.
It sure is, and thank the Lord that this year it's all back into the downtown core where we can walk from one stage to the next. They took away the Shipyard's stages, so I'm so happy because it was better when it was all just blocks away. You could go from one stage to the next and keeping it all tight. A lot of great new musicians are coming this year.
Who are you most excited to see?
You know, a lot of people I don't even know. The gentleman who's running it, Dave Harrell, came in yesterday. He gave me names I don't know, so I'm literally looking forward to getting an education and being exposed to brand new folks. And of course, for the classics, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing Chick Corea. I saw him in 1971 or two, so it'll be nice to see him again. I've been going every year since about 83.
Wow, and Electro Lounge celebrating jazz this week in honor
every
of the festival.
Every night, and we've got a little Miles Davis to send you off on your way. Thank you so much for making time for me, Melissa.
And keep listening every night to our after-hours music shows like Electro Lounge. Have fun at the Jazz Festival this weekend. 1A's up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this has been First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.